This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. God, family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got it. Blue Ridge Outdoor Supplies. Scott Payne is the owner of this business. He's in Elkton, Virginia. He also has a lure line, Mountain Rebel Lures and Baits. He's got a great coyote trapping video. He's also a fur buyer in Virginia. Anything that you're looking for and your trapping needs, give Scott a call and he'll get it right out to you. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're an ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company, have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you.
Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it. Fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light. Sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dig. Shotgun toter, Republican voter, Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA, cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got.
Hello everyone, this is Clint Locklear. We're trapping across America. I'm in the dirty command post of the van, gonna do an interview this morning. I was told this is an awesome interview, so there's no pressure on you on this, but I didn't listen to the full story because I wanted to hear it when everybody else was hearing it.
and I'm up at the NTA. I'm actually surprised. The show looks just like any other NTA as far as dealers and tailgaters and campers. So this may be a little bigger than we all were thinking. So if you missed it, guys, you may have missed something that had been pretty good. And I'm going to be in Little Valley in a couple of weeks, so I really appreciate it if y'all come in and say hi, because I hadn't been to New York in several years. So, you're the guy with the awesome story. So, who are you?
I'm Andy Weiser.
And you are from?
Melrose, Montana.
But that's not where I heard you originally from.
No, I was born in a little town called West Mansfield, Ohio. Logan County. Not far from Marysville. About an hour north of Columbus.
Now, did you trap when you were in Ohio?
Yeah.
Did your family get you into it?
No.
Or what got you into it?
No. 1977, every kid in Ohio wanted to be a trapper. And that's what I did. I started trapping muskrats in 1977 there, and couldn't have asked for a better place to grow up.
Did you have a mentor or somebody that guided you along, or just other friends were trapping, so you just got some traps and got with it?
Yeah, my grandpa had a few traps. I mean, he grew up in the Depression like a lot of old-timers did back then, and when I could start setting them by myself, I started setting traps. And I lived right on a creek full of muskrat and mink, and I just had the passion to be a trapper way before I ever started trapping.
I think most people have that gene in them if they'll ever just like give it a little bit of exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Because even when I do the control stuff that I do, I'm always amazed. You know, there'll be a guy there that I meet that gets off a G5 jet, and then he goes to run traps after a couple of days, and he sees a coyote or a bobcat or a couple of fox and a coon. And the next day, he's like wanting to start at 1 in the morning.
Right. I hear you. Yeah, when they got it in them, that's what they want to do.
So I'm assuming you just didn't like make a left turn somewhere in Illinois and end up in Montana.
No. Always wanted to be a hunting guide. And as soon as I graduated high school, I just made plans to head west. I was going to go to Colorado, and I did go to Colorado, actually, but I didn't like it there, and I just kept heading west and north and ended up in Montana.
What didn't you like about Colorado? Because that was back before it got all yuppie-fied, wasn't it?
It was still yuppie-fied when I hit that country. There was more people there than what I'd expected, and I don't know. I just kept traveling. When I landed in Montana, I knew that's where I wanted to be. That was 24 years ago now.
Isn't that crazy when you think about time now?
It is. I'd like to go back in time at least 10 years, but no, I love it. We're still got a good state, and we keep fighting the antis, but we keep winning, so.
I mean, I think part of Montana is, except for, I mean, y'all do have part of that western side that a lot of Californians and stuff are moving in, from what I understand, but that's still, I mean, when I went out to Craig's to take instruction, I got so tickled. We were in I think it's called an A&P grocery store.
Sure.
Yeah. And they only had one t-shirt in there. They had it in several colors, in several sizes, and it was shoot, shovel, and shut up. And I mean, I just thought that was awesome. It's yeah. In the grocery store.
Yeah, Eastern Montana mentality there. No, and Eastern Montana really hasn't changed at all. It's, like you said, it's the west side. I'm right on the edge of it. where I live on the Big Hole River. We've got our...
Big Hole or Big...
Big Hole River.
Hole, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's a world-renowned... It's a blue ribbon trout stream, and we get plenty of non-residents and tourists, but they're hunters and fishermen. It's a whole different mentality. West of me, Missoula, there's some good old boys that live over there and good trappers, but they are getting plagued with the antis out of Seattle and the West Coast antis. That's where they're holing up.
Well, I do some weird stuff in agriculture that, And I know there's a lot of the, and there's a hippie side to what I do. Not what I do, but the stuff that I'm kind of into. And I hear that a lot, you know, there in Montana.
Right.
You know, they like congregated there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Rainbow Coalition. They.
I don't know nothing about that. But.
Well, what I'm saying is they have these gatherings, and they had it a few years right in the middle of my trap line. I spent a good part of a month picking up their trash for them.
Mm. Well, I mean, to me, that's just strange, and not to get off topic, but Montana and Rainbow Coalition, those two just don't seem like they should pair.
I heard they're down in Utah now, so I guess that coyote bounty going to pay for some of that cleanup.
So when you went out through Colorado, were you trapping as you went, or what did you do?
Nope.
How did you support yourself?
Nope, I had saved up some money. I was just traveling, just looking for a place to live in my life. I was only 18, and
so what was your criteria at 18? I mean, when you think about an 18-year-old, not a whole lot. They think they know everything, but they really don't. So
no.
What were you looking for?
I don't know. I was just, I had traps. I had my guns. I didn't really have a trade. I didn't start a trade until after I got to Montana. Become a concrete finisher. That got my summers, put money in my pocket through the summers, and then guided fall hunts in the wilderness, and come out of the hills from that and start trapping.
So did you have to go to a guide school?
I didn't have to, but I did, and it was good because I learned how to pack, and we'd pull eight to ten head of mules down the trail, and we were 28 miles to 30 miles in the wilderness, Bob Marshall Wilderness, and that only lasted for a few months because the snow had run you out, and that's about when everything was priming up good and time to start setting iron.
Well, I mean, one of the things that, like when I'm in Lowell Valley, I'm doing a very weird demo, and it's like, how do you make a living trapping? And, you know, everybody has this romantic idea of, you know, you just go somewhere like Montana and you find somewhere to stay, then you just trap and, you know, every day it's sunshining and, you know, everything's just awesome and all that type thing. But reality is, you know, with you doing concrete finishing in the summer, I mean, that's a needed thing to do if you're really going to try to do the trapping. You've got to have money.
Oh, you got to. And back then, that was the 90s, you didn't have a problem catching fur, you had a problem finding a place to sell it. I mean, I remember selling some of the most beautiful pale coyotes, $15 average. And
I was right there with you, man, but I was getting three.
You know, but hey, it still paid the bills, you made up for it in numbers, and $15 went a long ways back then.
A lot more today, that's
yeah.
For sure. Now, I would say, I mean, it's kind of when we do our trapping schools, in a way, it's kind of guiding, but it's not like what you were doing. But I would say that skill set of dealing with people and different people that's bringing all their baggage out to the woods with you and all that, that had to help you with landowners.
Oh,
just
absolutely.
To be able to the relationship part.
Yeah, you had to be a people person to be a guide. Especially if you were relying on tips of any sort, but yeah,
you're praying they got the world record.
Well, you wanted to hunt hard, you wanted them to have a good time. That was the bottom line. You didn't always end up in animals like you wanted to. That's just hunting, but trapping's the same way. You know, you have your good years and your bad years, but you still wanted to work hard for them. Most honest people will see that. If you're a hard worker, you'll get the benefits of it, you know.
Now, is where you're at in Montana, like in Texas, Texas is a hard place to get ground. It's all private. They don't trust anybody unless they're a blood relative or they know somebody that knows you. Is Montana that way? Because I would assume, like where Craig's at, they're not going to talk to you unless there's a reason to.
Those ranchers know. I mean, you go up and you introduce yourself. They know. They've got a gut feeling just like everybody else. if you're the real deal or not. They don't want anybody on their ground that's not going to do a benefit to them. It's all about damage control. That's the bottom line. If you're going to be in there, they want a worthy trapper. I mean, they don't want you to leave beaver for seed if mm-hmm. you're doing damage control. They want them gone, and you just kind of grow a reputation. It's all word of mouth. I mean,
that's the best advertisement for sure. And what you just said, giving a service, I think trappers need to have a better concept of that. There, even if you're fur trapping, you need to look at it, even if you're just doing it purely as a sport, as a business, and your business is a service. And as long as you give the customer the best service, then business just comes your way.
It does. Absolutely. I ran a $20 ad in the newspaper, probably the best $20 I ever spent, because right then I got enough jobs that I learned how to be a good damage control trapper. I didn't go into some of these big ranches green. And that $20 ad, really, I recommend anybody that's thinking about becoming a damage control trapper to do a little bit of advertisement. And those jobs are just going to help teach you if you don't know already. Mm-hmm.
And see, that's the difference of where you live in, like, the eastern part of the country. No one reads newspapers anymore over here. So, yeah, we're just to find a different way to advertise.
We're just catching up with times on the computer. I built a website, and that's how I learned a computer. I had to.
You built your own from the beginning?
No, I had it built, yeah. But.
And is that for your ADC business?
No, for my lure business.
Lure business.
Yeah.
Okay, so what is that? In case I forget later to get you to
my business name,
mm-hmm.
Wiser Western Lures,
and is it just .com?
Actually, it's www.montanatrappingsupplies.com.
Okay, you have that on a card or anything?
Yeah.
Okay, that way I can put it in the, I'll put it down in the show notes so someone can just link over to it.
Okay.
Now, when you went out to Montana, you started a private thing.
Yeah.
Are you still private?
Yeah.
Do you work under the bounty system kind of like Craig does on the sheep?
Yep. It depends on the job and it depends on the ranch. If it's one of my better fur ranches, I'll go in and give them a hand if they need one. If it's a private landowner that I'm not going to benefit from ever again in my life, then we charge a setup fee, mileage, and then a per animal bounty.
So even in the summer, when it's costing you some income, you still go help out the...
Absolutely. Because I'm going to take 30 or 40 decent coyotes off there. I'm going to take a few bobcats off there. I'm going to make my money up in the first season.
Mm-hmm. Now, have you got into the badgers and pocket gophers? And
no, not the gophers. I'm staying clear of them. I'll go stamp concrete on those days.
Oh, do you still do concrete?
Yeah, occasionally. I'm going to the Nevada convention straight from here. As soon as I get done with that, I'll go home and do a stamp job. I enjoy that work. I do. I mean, 22 years of it. It's just like trapping.
Well, if you ever show up in Tennessee, I'll find you something to do.
I'll go trapping with you for sure.
We just had some done, and it was a train wreck.
No, so, I'm sure.
So, well, you know, I think, see, when I went full-time, I had a pool business. I didn't know that much about business. And when I decided to pull the trigger on being a full-time trapper, I just closed the doors. I mean, I didn't sell it. I didn't do anything. You know, I had a buddy that had a pool business. He gave me like 10 cents on the dollar for the stuff. When I just left.
Uh-huh.
And it took me about 4 years to figure out it's not a bad idea to have something in the dead of summer. Just for...
Break the monotony. I mean...
insecurity, you know.
As much as you love to trap, when it becomes a job, it becomes a job just like anything else, and Agreed. It doesn't hurt to go and do something that brings back some good memories. I mean, I worked with a lot of good guys in my life on that concrete. I don't want to totally give them up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes perfect good sense to me. So you're out there now, and well, I'm sure when you were out there and you first got started, you had to struggle a little bit.
Oh, it was a struggle from the beginning. It's still a struggle. I think that's just part of life. Times change, and they change for the better, don't get me wrong, but with the way the economy is, I mean, the economy's good, but there's still people tightening up their belt, and it's not like it was 10 years ago. We just got to make do with what we've got.
That's true, yeah.
If coyotes are paying good money, then we go trap coyotes. If it's in the pine marten, then we go after the pine marten.
You're not like a coyote religion guy, where
I am, for the most part. I mean, I'm addicted to coyotes. I'm not addicted to trapping anything else, but bobcats is where the money is, and I'm not addicted to them at all. We've got a good bobcat population, but I've got a 5-cat limit, and I've got to travel. I got to get over into Craig's country before I can get into unlimited area, which I used to do. And it was a rough way, living out of a van like this, pulling a Bronco 2 behind me, 30 below zero with a little Mr. Heater.
Where Craig's at now, don't they have, like, you don't know how long the season is. You just call in every day or something, and they just basically tell you to pull traps by Thursday or something?
Yep, they give you a 24-hour notice. It's called the cat hotline, pretty much, but it's a 600-cat quota on that end of the state, and it's unlimited per trapper, which I'm totally against a per-trapper limit. I think the harder-working trapper ought to reap the reward. I think it should be a total quota.
You like what they're doing on the...
I don't like the per trapper quota part of it.
Where you're at.
Yeah.
But over there, if you were to catch all... If you caught 559 cats and then everybody else caught that, then it would still be...
I hate to get into the politics end of it, because there's a lot of guys, I don't want to see anybody get cheated out of anything, but I just think if there's a total quota of animals that the biologist set, I think anybody should have the right to work as hard as he can to try to reach that goal. And that's not the way it is where I live. It's a 5 cats per trapper.
See, that sounds kind of like socialism to me.
It does.
I'm a capitalist.
I know. That's just how I feel about it. I think the harder working guy ought to have a shot at it.
And see, I've never really been in a state, well, of course I don't go to states with limits, but that's just a foreign concept to me. You know, like when I go up and give demos in PA or places, and they're allowed like 1 to 3 cats or 1 to 3 otter, and then, you know, they see the pictures at the booth, and they're like a day of 16 bobcats, and like, well, that's why I don't come to your state. You know, there's these things called roads where you can go somewhere else.
That's 5 years worth of animals for them.
Yeah.
In one day of your run.
Because that year we did 173, I think they were allowed, I think it's 3 cats. I divided that up at the demo, because someone asked, well, how come you don't trap Pennsylvania? I'm like, well, that 1 year of 173 cats, you know, that's decades of me trapping here.
Yeah.
You just can't make that up.
No, you can't.
So if you're into coyotes, well, tell me what makes a coyote tick.
Boy, I'll tell you, there's a lot of things that make that coyote tick. Skittish. I think that's why he'll live forever. Bold 1 minute, but skittish for the remainder of the day. Opportunist. Scavenger. I think I think if there was one animal left alive on Earth, it'd be a coyote.
And a possum.
Or a beaver, possibly.
Well, man, I can tell from your answer, in my humble opinion, that you really, from what you just said, you really have studied coyotes.
Oh, yeah.
Because when you say skittish, I use the word phobic, and I'm always scared to death to do anything. It drives me nuts. I'll see somebody at a demo go, "Will you just drag this log over here and set this in front of it?" And my brain's going, "Don't touch nothing. Don't touch nothing.
Yeah.
Don't move anything. Don't do anything," because it's his living room. He knows you moved his couch.
Yep. Yep, go in and do your thing and then leave him be. And then give him time to settle down and do his thing.
So since you're looking at him skittish, I'm assuming you're more of a low visibility, flat set kind of guy?
I am at times. I tear stuff up to let him know that something just happened in his area. But then I stand back and, like I said, leave him be and let him go in and do his thing. When I'm trapping in fur season, it gets rock hard froze, and it's hard to not make a flashy set when you're hauling in dirt, mm-hmm. and you're leaving tracks or whatnot. I just try to make it all look natural. Summertime damage control, then I really go to blending, because I can blend, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? I can hide a set completely. I can't hide a set during fur season where I live. It's just too froze, too tough.
When your season, though, y'all start a lot earlier than we do over here.
I start trapping fox the end of September in the high country.
Okay.
They're still just a little blue-skinned, but they've got really nice cherry red hides, good guard tips. They haven't been through a tough winter yet, and I usually don't start connecting for another week, which puts you into October, and then they're really starting to prime up, the fox are. And I'll catch a few coyotes, you know, accidentally in those fox traps. But basically, I'm just getting rolling. So about that second week of October, I can start slamming coyotes. That's pretty much when everybody starts in my country.
And how long do you have before weather sets in? I mean, like, I know y'all can get snow in July in Montana, but...
Well, I got dumped on with 2.5 feet of snow on the 29th of September last year.
Good grief.
Yeah, and then it got fairly nice. It was pretty good for about 2 weeks, and then she froze hard. It was using antifreeze and busting through with an axe from there on. But I'm using set locations that I've had in the ground for 5 years. I mean, I've still got cable stakes already in mm-hmm. the ground and running some grapple hooks, but for the most part we just prepare for it. I pack 300 gallons of dry dirt away long before, and
you're not doing the coal shell thing?
No, I live a long ways from the coal shell, and I used to use it, and I still do if I happen to go buy a pile and I got room to grab some. But I'm a calcium chloride man for 30 years now.
Old school.
Yep. And it always worked for me. I've kind of got it down pat where I get rid of the wet spot when it appears, and I don't throw my calcium around like a lot of guys do. I think that spooks them from the beginning. The only place I'm using calcium is right under my trap.
Underneath it?
Yep.
Because you're just putting dry dirt on top.
I'm putting the heat under it, because the heat rises, and I've experimented with it in a lot of ways, and that's the best way I found to keep it contained to just that trap size area. I don't want them to step into a calcium circle, so to speak.
See, I use salt, this dollar store salt, but my freezing ground and your freezing ground are two totally different things. The only thing that ever gets me in trouble, for most of the time, you know, even trapping, you know, south Midwest down, is just the top coat freezing. That's it, you know. And it's because, you know, one of the things I want to get into is how do you trap in that
because I get those questions all the time, and my answer is always go south. I mean, I end up on the Mexican border. I run away from it as much as I can.
I wasn't smart enough to do that. I was just a dumb concrete coyote guy.
But I mean, you figured it out, obviously.
And, yeah.
And it's one of those things. I go to where it's easier, you know, just because that's the path I've taken. You know, and I've got to catch probably on an average 7-8 cats to one of yours. And our coyotes in Texas, the last time we scanned a bunch of them, three guys split $3.20 and they took a dollar off tumbling. So
right.
$2.20 divided by three ways. So the coyotes, no, I'm not doing that again.
You made more money off your glands than you did off their hide.
Yeah. So when that starts, so you're carrying, you start off with that amount of dirt, but there's no way that's enough to last you for a season.
It really is, because it goes. I mean, I'm sparing with it, and it does. I mean,
so it's like 6 55-gallon drums. Is that about mm-hmm. what that is?
Mm-hmm. It's amazing how far I make my dirt go.
But you don't get rain like every day.
No, I live in a dry country. Yep, it's very arid where I live. It's a banana belt. One side of the mountain will stay open all year, no snow. But the north side, then I deal with the north side, and I make a loop clear around that mountain. I just, and I've got spots that the dirt will actually stay dry all winter. And I can collect on the line when my buckets start running short. So yeah, I might go through more. I collect 300, but I probably do use more than 300 because I am grabbing it from some spots where it never does freeze.
Now with being that dry out there, and I've never trapped out there in the wintertime, if you went under rock crevices and cedar trees, y'all have those?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that dry dirt pretty much in the wintertime?
Junipers, yeah, and that's the spot I'm talking right now. I've got some rock crevices that do stay dry and give me dry dirt. I've got a few old barns that I hit to top my buckets off. I mean, we're talking being 65, 70 miles from home and running out of room. I run a four-wheeler. I'll put 90 miles a day on a four-wheeler. I just bought a side-by-side this year, but when you get limited to that
a
much
heater in it, I hope.
I did. Full cab. Full cab heater. Winch. No, it's going to be a much better year because of it.
So when you're setting in the dry side, what would some of your sets be like?
Big dirt hole if I can get it in.
Like a badger type?
Yep, badger imitation. Type hole. With a big mound out front. I don't like trying to make them step into a little circle. I like them to step in two or three steps into my circle before.
So you're making sure there's no sweet spot.
Exactly. Because I've seen way too many times they come right up to the edge of it, look in the hole and go on about their way. If they get a couple of feet feet put down without any problem, then they don't have as much of a problem committing theirself. Mm-hmm.
Well, I remember when I went out to Craig the first time, and you know, being from the east, most of the guys I was kind of learning from were fox trappers that catch a few coyotes, you know, and they were making these little bitty dirt holes and these little bitty patterns, and you know, and I was watching him. His patterns were like 3 feet long.
Mine are
2 feet wide, and yeah. I was just mystified, and I started asking him questions, and you know, and that's what he was saying. He said, out here, if you have that little bitty box pattern, the cow will go anywhere he wants to, but it ain't gonna be in there.
And he is absolutely right. Unless he's half starved and you've got something down that hole that he has just got to have, and you've got a,
which is your baits and lures, I'm sure.
That's right. That's right. That's the whole key to it here. Isn't this what this conversation was about? Now, if you had a big rock out in front of that tiny little dirt pattern and you're stuffing him in between, then you got a chance at getting him to step in it. But if you don't have a walkthrough situation and he can go 360 degrees around it, you're not going to catch a coyote in a small dirt pattern in my country.
Okay, so you use big holes with big patterns. And then, do you do a standard dirt hole?
Or I'll use a mouse hole. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I use more stake, you know, mouse holes. Just punch a stake in the ground because it's hard ground to begin with. Even when it's not froze, it's hard ground. I'll just make a little mouse hole, and they're my favorite, to tell you the truth, with a big dirt pattern. I like...
Oh, you put the big pattern on the little bitty hole.
Absolutely. I like to get him, you know, he stops... He stops 3 feet short of that set, and I'm not sure if they do this or not. I can only imagine it. If I had your night vision, if I had your night cameras, then I would know for sure. But I can just see them stopping once they get their feet in that tore up area. They build more confidence. I think they work it a little better.
So when you are you. Do you have the opinion that the coyote needs to be out in the open? Or are you afraid of crowding him in? Or
no, I'm not afraid to crowd him at all. I just set where they go.
I think me and you could get along on a trap line.
Hey, if his tracks was up against that rock boulder, why wouldn't I catch him up against that rock boulder? He went there on his own recognizance.
Absolutely.
He's spending his everyday life there. I guarantee if a mouse ran across, he's not going to avoid pouncing on it because he was up against the rock backing.
Well, our mutual friend there from the Midwest, when him and his buddy came down this year to take instruction, they kept running way out in the open where they had no control of nothing, and I kept kind of like shoving them over towards edges and stuff, and it was driving him nuts.
Oh, yeah.
And then cause we were playing with those portable pockets. And I think those sets they put in end up catching, I think it was 6 coyotes.
I'll be darned.
And they were all in cover where most people would be afraid to put a coyote set or a fox set or even a cat set.
Huh. Cats for sure, I'm up against the edge. I set out in the open. If I think I'm going to run into a bunch of junk right up tight, I'll get out in the open, out in the wheat stubble or whatever.
Mm-hmm. You
know, which... I can't hardly catch a skunk in my country. I think they got the distemper in here. I'm having to buy them. Mm-hmm. Having to buy them now and can't even catch them, you know, for the lure making. But if I was trapping, say, Ohio, and I felt like, okay, here's a million possum tracks right up against the edge of this fence row, well, I am going to get out in the field then. And I'm not saying you're not going to catch that possum out 10, 20 feet out, because you will. But not as likely as you would if you sat right up tight to the fence row.
Absolutely. I mean, that's definitely true. So when you're dealing with that hard ground, you're probably using like a Maddox or a Pulaski or something like that.
Yeah. If it's real froze, I've got a, it's called a miner's axe. It's a heavy axe with a short handle. And I go to chopping. I don't even know what the thing weighs, 5 or 6 pounds probably, the head, but I keep a sharp axe, and that gets through that frozen ground to mine the best.
And then you're putting your calcium in the bottom, your dry dirt. Are you a metal screen guy or wax paper, canvas?
Coffee filter.
Coffee filter.
Yeah.
We would get along.
Yeah, I just never could get the wire screen down pat. Too many blow-ups and dirt in my eyes to really get it mastered. I like the idea of the big kill area, you know, but I've just learned to...
That's why we got to get you some traps with a big pan.
Put that nice little low depression over top of the pan and put it in the sweet spot where he likes to stop.
Have you seen the big pan trap yet?
Yeah, I've got a bunch ordered. They were going to bring them here, but... They said, could we ship these to Montana to you so we don't have to haul them all the way to the NTA? And I said, that'd be a great idea because I don't want to haul them all the way back.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
Well, how do you? One of the questions I always get that I really don't have a good answer. The closest of any duration that I've ever dealt with any amount of snow for any amount of time is me and a buddy. We're about 9,000 feet in New Mexico. And when we got up there, the snow came, it stayed. It was dry. It was not like something we have in Tennessee. So it didn't melt every couple of days. And we just left stuff alone, and the animals found it.
Absolutely.
And then when it started melting, right or wrong, and I'm kind of asking you this because I really don't know because I don't have that much experience in that. Once it started melting, because it did warm up a little bit, we just kind of like raked it away from the set best we could and left it alone again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I've never, because, you know, that's, because I don't know what to tell people when they're someone like New York and they get 2 foot of snow. I mean, I don't know if there is a correct answer on how to keep catching fur till that levels out or calms down.
Mm-hmm. No, you just got to keep pulling it up, pulling the snow off the top, like you said, raking it out. If it started to melt and my top layer of dirt's wet, I'll throw a handful of calcium right over top of the trap, hit it with a little more dry dirt, put my stepping guides back into place. I don't pre-sift my dirt, by the way. I like them clods, and I like a heavy clay for a trap bedding. I can get that trap packed in tight. I don't like loose. I'm not a peat moss guy. And nothing against peat moss. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a million trappers that do great with it. I just like a heavy clay with calcium chloride that's going to keep things warm in that trap bed, pack that trap in tight, and get my stepping guides back in place.
So it's too cold for you to use glycerin or glycol in urine or water?
Yeah, nope, that doesn't cut it. It'll work for the first day or two, but when I put a set in, I mean, I'm looking at a month later before
I was waiting till that came around.
Starts banging. I mean, for sure it takes me a week. My sets really don't start firing good for a week. But a lot of those locations, I'll leave be, and then all of a sudden a month later, it's payday.
Well, see, what you're saying, though, from, and I'm sure you probably know this from your business, there is a ton of guys, and I don't know what your footprint is on the internet, but in the last 3 or 4 years, we've had a huge influx of newer guys. You know, a lot of them from the deer side and the fishing side and stuff like that. And the patience level that they have with coyotes is like nothing.
I know.
You know, like, well, I set a trap out, and it's been 2 days and I didn't catch anything. What am I doing wrong?
I see that.
Well, not, just leave it alone.
Leave it be.
You know, don't put more lure in it. Don't go up and fiddle with it. Don't add this and just leave it alone. And
yep. You know. I'm not a re-lure guy. I'm not. And I'm not saying that to try to sell lure here. I bait and I lure good, and I probably overdo it the first, right off the bat. 2 weeks, 3 weeks later, I'll slide the four-wheeler up next to it. And not even get off the four-wheeler. That's why I got them squirt bottles and not a spray bottle. I'll shoot that set from 5 feet away with urine. Try to hit the hole if I can. If not, somewhere back in there. And then on down the road, that's how I freshen my lure. I freshen it with coyote urine.
Okay. Do you collect your own urine?
Yeah. Yep. Any good urine. I mean, heck, if it's fox, bobcat, whatever. That's to me, that's re-luring. Activating that meat down in there.
Well, I personally have got away from coyote urine. And the reason is when I've used people's urine that I've worked at a deal where it's one coyote or two coyotes in a pen, and that's the only urine that I buy, I see a huge advantage. But that's not an option for me. For the most part. And when I go to the multiple coyote in the barrel thing, my own black mouth cur dog can tell the difference, and she won't even pee on it.
Really?
She knows. I mean, I've tried to trick her several times. We'll go to the park, and she's getting older, so she really can't go with me anymore, and she still thinks she's, you know, the queen of everything, and she'll go from dog pee to dog pee and she'll scratch. She squats. I mean, she raises her leg like a male. I mean, it's the dangest thing I've ever seen. So I go out there a day before, like going to the post office, just to try to get her to do something. And I'll put urine that's been mixed by all these different... you can tell she catches the wind and she'll just go around it and go over...
I'll be darned.
To the next one.
And I had this conversation. Well, it was through a chat. It wasn't face-to-face conversation with Wayne Derrick. And we were talking about that too, individual coyotes, which is easy to do. If you don't have a fur farm, it's pretty much how you do collect your urine, is individual cages. I'm a firm believer in male coyotes. I've got one female. Because I collect her urine when she's in heat for my gland lure, but everything else is big males, and they're harder to keep because that's all they want to do is try to tear out of that cage. They're just cage wreckers, but definitely the strongest, darkest, best urine that you can collect, I think, is from a big old male coyote.
Well, see, the funny thing about the urine to me is I can go spray. Commercial, like I get mine from Tim. Mm-hmm. I know that's coming from multiple animals, you know, everything. And Daisy, my dog, she'll go pee on that.
Yeah, well,
and she'll pee on some fox urine.
It's because Tim's is clean.
Hmm.
I think clean urine is the whole key to the whole deal. I really do. It can come from a fur farm as long as it's a clean one. Some of that stuff out there is just so dirty that I think animals want to roll on it or totally avoid it.
Well, there was a batch went around the country a couple of years ago, and I'm not going to say who it happened to or where the urine came from, but it was actually so dirty and so much bacteria that it was blowing the jugs up on people's shelves.
Oh, bad batch of bait.
No, it was urine.
I know, but had too much meat in it. Droppings, that's what droppings are. That's why you got, that's why a lot of people has a problem with summer collection. A lot of that food that them coyotes get rid of didn't get fully digested. That's just meat coming out of them is what it is. And that's spoilage.
That makes perfect sense. I mean, it's...
You got to clean your cages every day. Bottom line, you can't be lazy. This isn't a business to get lazy in.
Well, I can't... I mean, to me, and I've only been around a few people that collect... coyotes, and besides just a hobby, you know, I've had several friends that just keep one or two, and that's just their own personal thing. But you're like a dairy farmer. I mean, to keep that clean.
Oh yeah,
you're there every day,
first thing in the morning.
You know, yeah.
Spray so it's not something cages down and feed water. I actually feed at night.
Do you sell your own urine, or do you just use it? You do.
I sell to a couple of dealers too, but I keep it pretty limited. Because I'm not, I don't want to be in a full-time urine business. I want to, it's just part of the deal of making a living as a trapper, you know mm-hmm. what I mean?
Just an income stream.
Yeah, and they started making me microchip my coyotes in Montana, which is kind of a new thing. 2011, they added coyotes to the same category as wolves, mountain lions, bears, and tigers.
Really?
Yeah. So I have to have a vet come and microchip. Either lip tattoo them or microchip them and then buy a permit for them. So
is that just to make sure you're not rotating stock?
I don't know. In case, I suppose in case they were to escape, go kill sheep, I'd be liable because they're marked. So pretty much it's turned into a full-time thing where it was just seasonal deal at one time, you know, winter collection, and either pelt them out or kick them loose, one or the other.
Now, do you do flat sets of any kind?
Oh yeah, if I can't get a dirt hole in, then it's flat set time.
And what would the standard
flat set for be like?
Mostly a two rock walkthrough. I just put a rock a foot apart, bed a trap in between, bait under one rock, whichever way the wind's blowing, and urine all around. And that I'm stuffing them between two rocks is what I'm doing.
So you really believe in bait?
Oh yeah.
Are we really related?
I don't know. No, I'm all about protein, and I think they're all about protein. Don't get me wrong, I love lure, but I don't start using lure till it starts getting really cold. I'm a horse meat or a cat meat guy, occasionally fish, with either fox or coyote urine all around, and I don't put my urine in one spot, and I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just old school Bill Nelson. I leave that set stinking like a coyote or stinking like a fox, and my bait is the focal point.
Now, are you a Bill Nelsonite to the point where you put it on your gloves, boots, tools, bag?
At times, honestly. and for no more reason than other than it makes me remember the old days, and I love it. I wished America was more like it was when we started.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah, every once in a while I say to myself, why did I just squirt urine down in my gear bag?
Well, Cindy used to get fired up at me because there's two smells that I absolutely love. And I have, I used to get my Tonquin from Dave Edmonds, which is, he passed away, he was up in Allegheny. Some of the best Tonquin, it actually smelled like Tonquin, not just the chemical part of the Tonquin. And even in the summer, I'd go put two or three drops in the carpet of my truck.
Had an animalistic smell instead of a candle smell?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he had that smell.
That's the kind that makes your nose tingle and your brain kind of fuzzy. That Tonquin is hard.
It is.
A thing of the past right there.
And then the other one is the first long line I ever did was out in West Tennessee, and the only lure I had, I think I bought, I don't know how many bottles of that I bought, but it was White Ring from Craig O'Gorman. And I still have two or three bottles that I keep, so at the beginning of every season, I smear that somewhere in my truck or Jeep.
Do you?
Just because that memory of that odor,
right?
It just makes me happy.
Exactly. I hear you. I know. I was playing around a while back with a lure, and when I cracked the lid, Hawbaker 500, Wiley Red 500 came to mind right then, and I just thought, man, I'd love to go back to 1980.
It's funny how that works. I think animals do.
Problem with it is, 2 weeks later, I popped the lid again, and it didn't smell like Hawbaker 500 at all. What the heck happened?
Well, now that's a whole different show right there.
I know.
Oh my goodness, you get into that stuff, and
yep.
So you do your. I can see that flat set. I have a guy who's probably going to listen to this show, and he does a walkthrough, and that's what he does on his coyotes, and he's saying that he's doing it for cats, and he can't keep the coyotes out of his walkthroughs, and now he's picking up. He's like, that must be the ultimate wolf set, because they just aggravate the snot out of him.
It's the ultimate predator set, as far as I'm concerned, in my country. Something about them two rocks. I'll take gland lure and glue some droppings down on top of one of the rocks. That's what I use my gland lure for. I mean, I use it for glue. It's really windy in my country, and I like to stick them droppings to the top with that gland lure, and then have some horse under the other rock on the offside. They've got to go in between there if they're going to investigate it. Maybe drag a log or some brush up, really pinch it off. Mel Harshberger style pinch points. A lot of them spots I've already got established, so I'm not really disturbing the area. It's already been disturbed, you know.
And the way you're setting, too, I would say over a course of years,
every coyote that comes by there is going to smell coyote odor.
That spot gets marked all year long.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, bam, a number three gets stuffed in there. And then you look up ahead and there's another circle. And you look up ahead and there's another two rocks and another circle. Or maybe it's a stump this time. Maybe it's two pieces of driftwood for backing. I don't get in a big habit of using rocks at every set. I think some of them smart dogs can key into that, but could be a cow skull. Hind leg of a horse, I love that. With the hoof 3 or 4 inches from the lever in my trap. You know, whatever, something natural to pinch them in.
I use deer for that. One of the sets, and I don't know if you ever want to try it, but I've actually had some decent luck. It's more work to put in. But there was an ADC guy, and he talking about old school. And this was years ago, and he was old then. I mean, he could barely get around on a almost like a walker crutch thing. He's from Georgia. And he had a guy to go with him, and his only job was to run the Mexican backhoe, which was the fence hole diggers.
Uh-huh.
And the soil in Georgia where he was at is a lot sandier. And he would take that, he would dig a hole down probably about 12 inches, 18 inches with that post hole digger. And he would wire off that deer leg, because you get them down south everywhere at the process. Those give you 55-gallon drums if you want them.
Right.
And he would wire that off to a disposable stake, and he would beat that in so it's sticking straight up in the air, which made me nervous when he first told me, because that's about as unnatural as you could get. And then he just fills that dirt in on top of it. So you got this deer hoof sticking out of the ground, and then he piles it up on both sides. Well, where you've got the flat side on the side, he puts two traps, and he's doing it for the live market, and he would run extension cables off to get them away from his leg, and he'd catch one and two at a time. And that old man, with the help of someone using the post hole diggers, was still catching over 100 coyotes a year.
Isn't that something?
And that's the only set he would use.
He had it down pat.
Mm-hmm.
I knew an old timer just like that, and all he would do is find a badger hole that was dug so the prevailing wind was blowing toward the travel way, and Eastern Montana trapper. And he'd wire a prairie dog down from the top of that badger hole so it was just hanging down in the hole. That's all he did. He killed thousands of coyotes.
That would drive a coyote crazy.
Oh yeah, they're gonna step down in, and it was just a natural step down set.
I've tried that a lot in Texas. The problem down there is the carry of Mexican eagles and the buzzards. I swear they can smell a mouse fart at 100 yards.
Yeah, that'd be a problem.
So I had to get away from. But like for the first 4 days, it's awesome, and then you might as well pull the trap, go find another hole.
Oh yeah,
you're gonna have an issue going on.
Yeah, now there's spots where you've got to hide a set from critters like that and just rely on lure. Yeah, we got the same kind of birds. I tell you, I don't do a bunch of big carcass stuff. I don't, not even when I'm snaring. I like bait stations, but there's good points and bad points.
Now, your snaring, we'll finish up with that. What's your kind of your go-to snare? What's the setup on it?
I'm really liking 1/16, 1x19 cam lock. I'm not a big fan of the 50-pound choke spring. I've killed just as many coyotes with the 25-pound, but cam lock choke spring.
Are you putting teeth in them?
Sometimes, sometimes not. If it's a good quality cam lock, yeah. Because then I can get two or three more uses out of it. I've had some soft metal cam locks that the teeth wiped out on the first coyote, which they're disposable anyhow, mm-hmm. But when you were born poor, you like to reuse them cam mm-hmm. locks, you know. If you get a good one, you know, I'm not going to push Craig stuff, but if you get like an O'Gorman lock that's good quality, one of them Canadian-made locks that the teeth will stay good for a few times. Yeah, I'll teeth them up.
And you make your own or you buy the snare?
I both. I used to build all my snares here lately. I haven't had time. Can't even find anybody to help bottle lure. I'll buy them already made.
Well, I used to make all mine, and then, I don't know, about 8 years ago, I called up the snare shop, and I mean, going to take, we go through so many fence snares, and I was like, I told him what I needed. What could you make those for? And he goes, he gave me the price, and I'm like going, well, that's like a dollar more than it would cost me. Well, how long would it take you to make them? He goes, well, how many do you want? And I'm thinking of that price going, he's going to change his mind next year. So I go, I'll take, I don't know, 75 dozen? They were at my door in 4 days.
Had them already
custom made. I was like, wow.
See, he had to, had the reserve. Got, had to get in the reserve.
Well, they use machines somehow. Now Chubb's making them for me, and he's doing them by hand. It takes a little bit longer, but now they're coming from Chubb's preloaded. I mean, I just get out of the
nice,
you know, out of the thing, and the little bit more it costs me is definitely worth it, you know.
Yeah.
And what I was going to ask you, when you were making them, I used to use 1x19, because this is another thing, because I've always pushed 1x19 snares.
I like 1x19. I like that big loop. On coyotes, I do. If it's a narrow trail, I like 7x7 with a loop, with a teardrop loop, and get that lock up above their eyes.
And were you using aluminum, or did you go to the steel nuts on the 1x19?
I've never had, I've had a few steel, but for the most part, I've always had the aluminum, just because that's what I had available to me at the time. I used to buy a lot of my supplies off old Glenn Hansen right there in Montana. He died last year, so that kind of opened the door up for a dealer in Montana. But I would use whatever Glenn had around, because I did a lot of trading with him, glands and urine and whatnot. And he was only a half hour drive from me, so I'd just jump over. And
are you a long snare guy, short kill pole?
Long, longer the better. Sometimes I've got to go a long ways to tie off. I'm not a big fan of staking my snares down. I mean, I just feel it's faster to be able to tie off to sage or fence post.
Yeah, mine are about 14 feet is what I carry, because normally somewhere within 14 feet of where I need to be, there's something.
That would be a good size. I'm building them 10 feet, and then I pack in 10-foot extensions, so I can reach out about 20 if I have to. Extensions are a pain. That's just extra time getting them thrown together. But
that's the reason I just make it all. But I can see, because some of that, depending on where you're at, because I haven't been where you're at, but some of that sage is big enough to tie off to.
Oh, it is. Absolutely. My part of Montana is. A lot of Mount Montana, the sage, heck, a coyote jerk it out the first hit. But
And I will have to say this, and don't take this wrong, but when I went out to Craig's and we were talking about snares, now you have to admit, if your country's like Craig's, Ray Charles could set in them cow trails going through them sage. That's the most amazing thing I've ever seen.
Well, honestly, I killed quite a few coyotes last year, and I think I only snared a dozen. And I'll tell you why, because if you're selling lure, it sells better when you're catching them in foot traps.
Well, it's giving proof to what your product
is. That's the whole deal right there. I'm addicted to trapping. I mean, I like snaring, don't get me wrong, but there's nothing prettier than a nice pale coyote put up that didn't have a loop around his neck.
Well, plus your coyotes are so expensive, and they have been for a while. You don't want any mark on that thing.
Exactly. It doesn't take much to break the guard hairs on them. That time of year, when it's froze out, they're fragile. They are. They're already getting ready to start breaking. And it just doesn't. It's like a beaver in the spring. He looks beautiful until he hit that 330, and then all of a sudden he became fragile, and coyotes are the same way.
Well, that's cool. Any other last words of wisdom to somebody that wants to catch coyotes that you can think of?
Be patient.
Patient.
Be patient and hang in there. Don't go to all that hard work of putting your sets in and give up 2 weeks later. You got to give it a month.
Now, how can you tell someone to be patient? Our world revolves off a 24-hour news cycle and a 10-minute Facebook
maybe
cycle.
Maybe coyote trapping wasn't for you.
Well, I do. I feel sorry for guys they get pumped up on coyotes. And just the way that their life is, they go set them on Friday night, and then they got to pull them Sunday afternoon, and they get frustrated because they don't catch.
Yeah, and I don't know what to tell them.
That's rough.
Yeah, I don't know what to say. It's not going to work out. I mean, if you're full of passion and that's what you want to do, then go do it. You know what I mean? But don't expect it to happen overnight, because it's not going to.
Well, this was a good interview. I mean, it
was fun.
I think so. So on your stuff, do you have DVDs or books? Or
no,
just lure.
Yep, just bait? A trapper, really. I shoot video to play at my at the conventions at my tables. I've got hours and hours of video, but I don't know, Clint. You guys, I take my hat off to you, because there's ups, and there's got to be a ton of ups and downs when it comes to selling your DVDs.
Oh, well, the thing I'm running into now, and the game wardens that are listening, I know you're listening to this, several of the game wardens around me kind of got into it through either me or someone that I've helped around home, and I haven't trapped that much around home, so it hadn't been that big of an issue. But what I get tickled at, I'll have, like when I did my Otterly Simple DVD and I shot some of that, I mean, within 10 miles of my house. Every year now, and I'm pretty sure it's the game wardens doing it, they'll watch YouTube or they'll watch one of my videos, and within a week, they've got a trap set there.
Yeah, that's nice.
And I'm just glad that the game wardens are into it, really. I mean, I'll give them a hard time about it, but then they'll watch a video in a week, and I show how I cut them off from using my old set. And they'll have one there.
Huh.
And then I'll show them again how I cut them off again. So it's like a game, you know, a game to me. But, and we don't have a ton of trappers, you know, but I could see, like, you know, going back to Craig, he's had some train wrecks with instruction and videos and stuff like that. And it is... I've learned when I'm doing filming, I just have somebody with me. They just run the camera, and they got to keep up and go about it that way. Or not, you never get anything done.
No, that's why I didn't hardly shoot any video at all this year.
By yourself, it's too slow.
It takes all your time. Mm-hmm. It does. I shot maybe an hour's worth. I maybe shot 10 coyotes and a badger, and that was it. It was just, hey, I got a good coyote market this year. I'm a fur trapper. Hammer down.
Well, who else is carrying your stuff? So people, is Tim carrying it?
No, Montgomery Fur in Salt Lake, Nathan Montgomery. Mm-hmm. He's one of my dealers, and then I've got a few small dealers, but I don't make enough to supply any big guys. I really don't. I'm just keeping it short and sweet. And
well, maybe there'll be some guys out there like what you said and give your stuff a try this
year. Yeah, hopefully. They'll like it, I promise them. If not, give me a call. We might have to do some instructions if it didn't work.
Well, all right, man. I greatly appreciate it. This was good.
Hey, you bet, bud.